Welcome back to Heroin Butt Sex and Lord of the Rings. We are here on an extremely hot day in Los Angeles. The ice cream truck is out front. Hopefully you won't hear it, but if you do, that's what it is. We are here with David Obuchowski, the host of formerly Jalopnik's Tempest. Now, where is Tempest going, David?
Tempest now lives within the Acast family.
Acast for season two.
Yes, and Jalopnik I still write for. Great, great place, and you know, they're supporting in spirit.
Very well.
So yes.
Tempest, a show about cars and the people who love them and the relationships between them.
Yeah.
David, you're also an accomplished touring musician. What are the bands again?
All the household names, you know, that you know, so I obviously you guys know this, but now I've got some bands. Publicist UK, kind of a really heavy, as they say, post-punk band that's on Relapse, and Goes Cube was my longtime band. We're sort of on indefinite hiatus after a billion releases. Those are the kind of heavier. Goes Cube is kind of, you know, metal and very aggressive and loud. Some dreamier stuff, Distant Correspondent, and a new project that hasn't done too much yet, but it's called Memory Bias. So
I'll have links to all of those bands in the show notes. And you also just moved from Denver to Los Angeles.
Correct. Yeah, I'm working my way west. Curious to know how, you know, I don't know if that means I'm going all the way around the world at some point,
but
I
did live in New York. Oil rig.
Yeah, right. So I did New York and then Colorado. Now I'm out here. I'm working on developing a TV show with some incredible people. I wish I could tell you about that. I'm very excited about it, but alas, not the time yet.
Not yet. First song of the day, Sweetest Taboo. Written by Helen Folashade Adu and Martin Ditcham, 1985. And here are the lyrics. If I tell you now, will you keep on loving me? If I tell you how I feel, will you keep on bringing out the best in me? You give me the sweetest taboo. You're giving me the sweetest taboo. Too good for me. There's a quiet storm, and it never felt like this before. There's a quiet storm that is you. There's a quiet storm, and it never felt this hot before, giving me something that's taboo. Sometimes I think you're just too good for me. You give me the sweetest taboo, that's why I'm in love with you. You give me the sweetest taboo, too good for me. Sometimes I think you're just too good for me. I'll do anything for you. I'll stand out in the rain. Anything you want me to do, don't let it slip away. There's a quiet storm, and it never felt like this before. There's a quiet storm. I think it's you. There's a quiet storm, and I'd never felt this hot before, giving me something that's taboo. You give me the sweetest taboo. That's why I'm in love with you, etc. And then the ending, you've got the biggest heart. Sometimes I think you're just too good for me. Every day is Christmas and every night is New Year's Eve. Will you keep on loving me? Will you keep on bringing out the best in me? Those are the lyrics to the band Sade's song, Sweetest Taboo.
It's not Sade.
Sade.
I'm going to be saying it Sade.
Sade, okay.
I think as an American, you can say Sade, and that's fine. I don't think Sade herself, Helen, would be too pissed at you for saying Sade, because you're just American.
Right.
It's like if I went to the South and someone was like, Richie, I'd be like, all right, fine.
Right, yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Very provocative and mysterious video in which Sade is practicing with her band. She's just there all alone by herself, staring out a window into a rainy sunset. And then her band comes in, and they, she's very forlorn. And then the band comes in, starts to cheer her up. And then in her, apparently what I would say is maybe in her memory, we're going back into this affair that she had out and about, seemingly like in North Africa or something. It was very or in Spain or something like that. This which is a lot of fun. And also, if you want to see Sade on a horse, you can do it by watching this video. Then she finds a gun in the glove compartment of his Jeep in the desert. He's drinking from a bottle. He then throws the bottle into the desert. And then they find some sort of abandoned fortress or something like that. And then the video kind of leaves them. The band manages to cheer Sade up. But when the song is ending, she goes back to sort of staring. Now it's nighttime. She's staring out the window, forlorn again, and writes in the fog that their practice has created on the window, temor, which is Spanish for fear. The cutaways, you know, with them out in the desert, seem like the past.
Okay, that's a good question. I was going to ask you guys, do we have evidence that these are, that would be the standard interpretation, is like these are flashbacks. Mm-hmm. She's remembering something. Is she not actually conceiving of this entire story in her mind? Is this not a fantasy of her own?
Right.
What evidence do we have that this has happened?
Well, I would just like, why would she conceive such a worrying story? Like,
well, I would say, if you take the butt sex interpretation,
thank you.
I think finding a hidden gun and then entering a fortress.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely, after riding a horse, like there's definitely some sexual symbolism to that. Like,
definitely.
Like this is scary, but it's also powerful.
Yeah.
And also, you know, we're gonna go into this ancient place that's never had a visitor / invader before.
I'm going to agree with that. I think that her desire has ratcheted up to the point where it's become, oh, this is intriguing. This is really interesting. And then by the end, she's literally frightened by her own desire. And, so that's where I'm at with this.
Yeah.
Well, I hear what you're saying with the butt sex stuff because, well, you know how I feel about music videos. Sometimes they're relevant. Sometimes they're kind of irrelevant. I'd call this one quite relevant. I feel like she and her squad had some control over this. Writing the Spanish word for fear in the thing and then getting it included in the video,
right,
implies a lot of control from the band. So I'm inclined to think that this video is part of the interpretation, or that it should be more allowed than usual as part of the interpretation. I guess I will say that like the first shot of the video, Sade's butt is lit up.
It's literally got a light on it. It directs your attention to
and
it.
I kind of feel like that, like almost more than any other pop figure. Like I don't know a lot of biographical information about her. Don't like she's not really
that's her intention.
A celebrity very, in that
very
sense.
Private.
Yeah. But because of that, like, and it makes her like a very pure force in that sense, where it's like, is she married? I don't know. Like,
right.
How old is she? Like, older than I think, but still timeless somehow.
Timeless, right.
She's definitely older than any of us, no matter how. Even if Sade was 21, she's still older than any of us.
And I also think that you can make a case for a lot of her other music as being like, first of all, you know, they're
butt sexy.
Yeah. And I mean, the band is, you know, it is her name, but also you got to think of the famous French libertine, the Marquis de Sade. And,
I don't know.
He crosses a lot of boundaries.
I don't think it's, I hear what you're saying, but the origination of the word is different.
You don't think it's shoddy masochism a little bit?
Full of shoddy.
I think that her music is, from the very beginning, from her first record, has been associated with this sort of, you know, this sensuality, the sexuality.
And this very continental, this very like worldly sexuality.
Well, I mean, there is the famously one of her, is it Smooth Operator? Where she's like...
she's singing the praises of a male prostitute.
And she's saying, coast to coast, LA to Chicago.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, and which, yes.
I don't get the joke. What's that?
Okay,
coast to coast, and she's like.
Right.
Well, she doesn't have to care about the geography of America.
That's the thing. That's my point, is that if this were some mid-level, you know, like B grade person trying to sound
sexy.
A
sneaker pimp,
she would be embarrassing herself. Instead, she's like, I don't even fucking care where Chicago is. Listen, she's I'm on like, a private jet. Yeah. I'm sipping champagne. Okay? I want butt sex.
Does she also want heroin and a copy
of so I was going to get to the I was going to get to the heroin thing on this. But I, my point being that I think that she kind of brought the sensuality and sexuality to the next level. And so in, rather than just sing about like your pedestrian sex missionary, whatever, what can I sing about that's taboo, that's going to be bring it even more and yet pull it off? I think she did it here.
There are a bunch of kind of soft rock stations that call themselves the Quiet Storm.
Right.
Well, and it's okay, that term, you know, which is one of the central terms to this song, came from a radio show. Well, Sade and her group could have heard about this term in one of two ways. There's a Smokey Robinson song called The Quiet Storm from the 1970s. And then there is a radio show originated in 1976 in at WHUR in Washington, D.C., out of Howard University, which was described as beautiful black music from the 50s, 60s, and 70s that was aired late night. And it was so successful, it spread all around the country. There are still radio shows called The Quiet Storm to this day. There's no question at all that Sade either got this term from Smokey Robinson or from that radio show that...
They probably got the name from Smokey Robinson, too.
They def... So, yeah, Smokey Robinson is the origin of the term, The Quiet Storm. So that's not their invention, but it's sort of late night, like getting down with your lady or your guy music. That's where all that came from. It's not their invention.
There's something to be said. It's a quiet storm, but also it never felt like this before. So if Smokey Robinson's is about getting down, sex, she's going, okay, I got that. And it's like that, but it's also different.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing. Like, if someone introduces you to heroin, you're not going to be like so grateful to them that you're going to call them the quiet storm, unless like it's like this sort of combination of sex and heroin that is, you know, transporting for the person. So it clearly is about sex. The question is it about butt sex, or is it about sex inside of Lord of the Rings, or is it somehow connected with sex and heroin? You know, these are the tough questions.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about Sade and the drug stuff, the heroin in particular. So Sade, I think, because she's so mysterious, because she appreciated and valued her privacy so much, and because I think she was a, I think because she could too, she took time in between her albums.
8 years.
Yes, and was... again, the mystery fueling intrigue, but also rumors. But she was personally and professionally damaged by rumors that, in fact, she
was a heroin addict.
Is a heroin rumor. Addict.
That's a rumor.
And this is the rumor, of course. And that she was even fucking smuggling drugs. That she was like a drug trafficker. And that, you know...
Well, I mean, Fabulous got caught with like how many, like almost a ton of weed in the bottom of his tour van. So it's like not out of the question.
I mean, she does seem like she could be capable of anything cool. You know what I mean? Like,
But on the
but
other
there's
side,
there's no foundation to it. She's
I'm thinking like, okay, here's a woman who is doing things on her own terms. She's a person of color in this industry. She's writing, you know, Spanish words. And of course, people sort of invent this thing and they go, oh, Sweetest Taboo, which was, it was also the subject of rumors that it was about heroin. She mentioned in Jet Magazine in 1992 that there were rumors that she had died. And she got to the point, she was so, you know, hurt by all the rumors that were going on that she was actually happy to read those rumors because maybe people would fucking leave her alone.
Leave her the fuck alone.
So, I mean, she's
very shy.
And I, so I'm of the, and maybe I'm sort of defending her. She doesn't need my defense for sure. Yeah. But
okay. So I think, you know, in terms of like coming to any kind of certainty on this stuff, I always start with the lyrics because the lyrics are the statement.
Mm-hmm.
That's the root of the material. Like you can, then you can go from there into how the song sounds. Then you can go into the artist's life and then you can go into the video. Inside the song, there's an argument to say that we are inside of an if-then statement the entire time. You could make an argument that she then moves on to praise her lover, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But this if thing remains, and it is the defining, I would say the defining characteristic is this uncertainty that is brought on by the initial if.
Totally.
Which is if I tell you how I feel, will you continue loving me? And then you're saying, and then she's saying, well, I love you and I'm worried. That's where the crux of the mystery to the song lies for me. And it's a grammatical thing. If I tell you X, will this wonderful thing continue? So that's, I mean, that's really what we're, I think if we solve that, then we'll have the answer to the song.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I honed into that as well. And to me, it reads like the kind of a question that Dan Savage might get from his readers, which is this sort of, I have this fetish or this kink or this mm-hmm. desire. I have a great
Am
partner.
Am I okay? Right. But desire, what's the butt sex related question that she has?
Because if I tell you that I'm interested in butt sex,
mm-hmm.
will you keep on loving me, or are you gonna think like, "Oh my God, what she is"?
Are you gonna think I'm a loose woman?
Right, exactly.
Think I'm tainted?
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally.
Okay. So I think
ruining the virginal image. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So Sade is like in her mid-20s at this point, and so what you're
she's sounds, timeless, but
yes, of course, she's still in her mid-20s.
I mean, that is actually the most Lord of the Rings interpretation is that she is. As ageless. An elf. Yeah.
Fair enough.
But so I guess, okay, I hadn't thought of this. So it sounds like what you're alluding to is Sade, woman of the world, studied in jazz, you know, she's done everything. She's toured the world already with her previous album, Diamond Life, I think was right before this.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is she's met this person, which doesn't sound like the person in the video, because the guy in the video looks like fucking criminal who's like been a, you know, they seem like a good pair in that they're both like, she's a badass, he's a badass, they're both dangerous, you know. But it sounds like what you're talking about is her having found this like some young guy who doesn't know what he's doing, and she's, but then why would she be insecure about telling him that she wants him to fuck? She wants him to fuck her in the ass. Like,
well, I think
be like, well, take it or leave it.
I think a lot of gangsters, in fact, tend to have more of that Madonna whore complex.
Mm-hmm. Ah, I see.
That's true. Yeah.
Uh huh. And like, just that ultra machismo dominance thing. That you're in more trouble. Telling you, like, if you know you're into butt sex, that means you've had butt sex with a different partner.
I see. And that's
presupposing a universe of different men. Whereas I feel like Sade is in this.
She
exists in a very ethereal sexual realm. You know what I mean? There's not a lot of like locked in roles.
Right.
Yeah.
So she's an experienced woman who knows what she likes. She's met someone who she feels deeply for, knows, okay, I'm into some things that's they're kind of advanced. I have experience. Men, even though they like to act all tough, they're fucking all kinds of thin skin. And yes. Are they going to feel super like, oh my God, I don't know if I could be with her. She's been with too many dudes. So I'm wondering if there's sort of multiple narratives in the song. I still think I know what it's about. But clearly, she's setting up this.
Team butt sex.
Is that yes, right? Absolutely. Okay. This is clearly it opens up with this. You know, talk about timeless. This timeless concern. You know, if I tell you this thing, are you going to get scared and run away?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to lose you. That's all it is.
Yep. Well, so the other two big sort of horcruxes or palantirs or whatever the fuck kind of like nodes you want to point to in this song. I think one of them, Okay, so we have like the relationship depicted in the video. We have the text of the song. And then inside of the video, we also have two other things. The two other things are the gun in the glove compartment, which worries Sade. She's not happy about it, and she's worried about it. The second one is what she writes on the window at the end, which is fear. So does that go, I mean, is this just sort of a weird tale about this woman who meets some young hothead who's never slept with a woman who slept with anyone else, and now he's trying to tackle a goddamn lioness, and he doesn't know what he's gotten himself into, and she is worried that, you know, the same way that you should be, the younger the gang member you encounter, the more afraid you should be, you know, sort of thing, because they have something to prove. And this guy, although he does seem to be like 40 years old, has a gun in the glove compartment. And if she reveals whatever she has to reveal, she's a little bit worried about what is going to happen with the gun.
I think it's hard to take the video part too literally. Like, I think you can see some pretty easy sexual symbolism in that that does not literally have to do with an actual gangster and an actual gun.
Yeah, you know, because it's less there in the song.
It's just a dude who's powerful. You know what I mean? Right. This dude is a quiet storm, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think the distinction she makes at the end is like, every day is Christmas. That standard, family-friendly New Year's Eve.
You can take pictures. Yeah.
New Year's Eve, anything goes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're gonna quit a lot of the activities that you engage in on New Year's Eve that next day.
Yeah, so all bets are off. Here we go.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And so, like, every day is Christmas. It's like the duality. This is the normal, regular relationship. Nighttime, sweetest taboo comes out. It's New Year's Eve.
Yes. Right. Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to fit this inside of heroin, like I wrote down, like, what the if-thens would be. Inside of heroin, it would be that I'm afraid to tell you that I do heroin. And then the other one would be, I'm afraid to tell you that we need to stop doing heroin. And that's a little more likely, but I still don't think it holds that much water.
Yeah.
Because it seems like it does seem like they're on a slightly different page inside the video, but again, like you said, we're in this video maybe a little too much, and maybe we should just stick to the lyrics like good critics here.
I mean, the gun can just be also a metaphor, just a general metaphor for sexuality. It's powerful, used in the right way.
She is disturbed by the presence of the gun.
Right, uh-huh. But used in the wrong way, someone could get hurt. It could kill something. And so, fear, you know, it's powerful. It, you know,
but right. I just feel like it doesn't quite mesh with, again, we both have not done heroin, which is an important part of the podcast, but
no, it's fine. I've dated people who do heroin. Yeah. I can, you know,
we're heroin adjacent.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's awesome. Now did you, Rich, I gotta ask, could you find a Lord of the Rings parallel?
All right, here? I got three of them. I'll go real fast because these are not that compelling to me. One would just be Frodo not wanting to tell Sam that neither one of them is coming back from this journey.
Uh-huh. Right, right.
Which is like the fear, if I tell you what's really up, that we're both gonna die in this pursuit.
Yeah, you keep bringing out the best in me.
He is definitely bringing out the best in Frodo.
Yeah.
So that is pretty good. But
he's kind of a quiet storm.
Absolutely, but every day is not Christmas.
Yeah, right? And if he's talking about, like, I've never felt this hot before, he's probably talking about an infected wound from
Or they're right at the gates of Mount Doom. Yeah. You know, like, and it's they're already traversing lava flows. Like,
we're on a volcano right now.
It does make sense in that sense. Like, they would have to be, like, already at the volcano, like, heading in there, being like, if I tell you, because Frodo is convinced that neither one of them is going to make it back.
Yeah. But I don't know what the sweetest taboo is exactly.
Exactly.
Is it the ring itself?
And Sam is not giving him something. The only thing he's giving him is true friendship and just stalwart commitment.
But it's very rarely celebratory.
Taboo.
Yeah.
It's not taboo and it's not celebratory. So that one doesn't work. Saruman talking to Sauron doesn't work either because it's not sweet. He doesn't like he does relish it, but only for selfish reasons, and it's not connective. He doesn't love Sauron.
Yeah.
And then the only third one would be Gandalf talking to the hidden flame, the secret fire, rather. Saying like that because he was given guidance of the ring. He wasn't. He was handed the ring.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a. Well, even before he was Astari, he was.
A Maiar.
Yeah, he's Maiar. He's been handed the ring by Iluvatar.
Yeah.
To watch over, which is amazing. I mean, Iluvatar, in a way, also serves this secret flame, you know?
So. Yeah.
But that doesn't quite, it's just not, it's an assignment again. Like, Gandalf is not, celebrating this. He celebrates the quiet times.
Yeah.
You know, he's like a really good kindergarten teacher.
Yeah. And I mean, the one thing that does work is like the Christmas and the New Year's Eve, because he does give a lot of gifts and set off a lot of fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
But
he's the speaker here.
Yeah.
That would be Frodo talking to him or someone talking to him. And I'm talking about him talking, because the sweetest taboo, like, and then Gandalf passing the ring off to Frodo, it's not pleasant at all.
Out. The only other taboo I could think of was like the kinslaying, and that was like not pleasant at all. So
tell us about this.
Oh, just I think it's the first age. It's the elves. I think it comes down to Fëanor's oath that everybody has to like take up arms, and eventually elves get in the way, and it's the first time elves are killing other elves. But it's not. It's not censure. It's just a taboo.
It doesn't sound like very sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think we can write out Lord of the Rings. And the heroin stuff, it just doesn't add up. So, but there are several different versions of the butt sex thing. And I knew we were going to burn most of our time on this song because it's more confusing than the next one, even though that one's confusing too.
2019. When someone hears the song, even if they've never heard it before, in fact, especially if they haven't, what do you think they're going to go toward, heroin or butt sex? I think there's no question. If you come at it without the cultural context of the time and the tabloids, you know nothing about who she is, and you don't read the tabloid section or the rumors.
I think people are just completely baffled, honestly. Like, I don't... because... there's these other things like, why would that person be too good for them? Our previous guests on our very last episode, Annie Hardy talked about the sort of degradation aspect of butt sex, which I don't know. I've never had been the recipient of butt sex, but I never had particularly thought of it as a degrading or controlling act. You know what I mean?
I think it's different things to different people, right?
That's what like I'm realizing else. More and more.
So, I mean, and Sade is, she's, you know, again, she's like, look, I know what I like about this. I know that I like it. And I don't know, the whole you're too good for me, that just sounds like, it just sounds it's like the
false,
the real humility. Nice thing you say when you're in bed and you're feeling, you're in the moment. You're real good. You know, you're just too good. You know, you got to lay it on a little thick, right?
Yeah. She's got three albums with love in the title.
This is like a common thing, you know, like, you must be my shining. Madonna was doing it at the time, too, where she's like heaping praise on some lover of hers. And it just seems like a little much and sort of a fantasy that this person could possibly love the listener. It's just an absurdity. So maybe it was just a bit of that.
Yeah.
Real quick, though, on the butt sex thing, I'm just going to throw two things out there that I think we can discredit them pretty quickly. One is, okay, so actually, I think the first one that I wrote down is, you guys have convinced me that it might actually be credible, which is, I want to get into butt sex stuff with you, and I'm worried about how you're going to feel about that, because if I know about that, then what does that say about me? It's kind of like the slut shaming idea mm-hmm. yeah. that you guys are talking about.
I kind of wonder too if it's like, I did this with you once, and I'm afraid to tell you how much I like it.
No,
I don't. I don't know. How does that make sense? Because if
because he does it once, and then she's like, if I tell you this, I don't want you to think I'm a whore, but that opened up my world. You brought out the best in me.
Yeah. I don't
when
think
you did that.
Yeah, it just doesn't make that much sense though, because like if you're sleeping with someone and then they tell you like, I like what you did there. Mm-hmm. I mean, what if but this is a young hothead with a gun,
and it's 1985.
Okay,
yeah. I mean. All right. It could be, and it solves the problem of, like, who is the you? And, you know, if I tell you this, and then later on you are giving me this thing,
yeah,
the right. sweetest taboo.
Well, in all of these songs, like, the you is always split. It's always the lover in the story of the song, and it's also the listener. It would exist in written poetry as well. You know, if you read an erotic poem and it was addressed to you, then you as the reader would split it in your head. You would say, she's talking about someone, but right now, for now, she's talking to me.
Yes. Or I can more easily put myself in the scenario, which you right. know, makes it more appealing.
And then the only other butt sex element or version I could think of, which would just be that she's, you know, that the speaker, not Sharday, obviously, but the speaker in the song is saying, like, I don't want to tell you, but I have a penis.
What? I didn't really pick that up as much in this one, I think.
Is that, are you going back to the music video with the gun thing? Where's the penis in this?
Well, it would just be that the character she's portraying in the flashbacks is someone who presents as a woman but has a penis. And is dating this guy. They haven't taken it there. Now they end up in this isolated area. He has a gun. She has a penis. He has a penis. What's going to happen?
I feel like there's not a lot of lyrical evidence for this one.
But I mean,
but maybe
that sounds like that's all set up. But the rest of the song is a lot of ecstasy in this. Like you were
right.
You
already,
give me this. You give me this.
It.
It's great. It's wonderful.
Okay. See, so that's why I said it was easily disproven, because it seems as though the speaker and the subject of the song have already been through a great deal of fun times together in a bedroom.
Yeah,
it's raining outside.
I also like that only in. In this cutaway scenario in the music video, does she have a penis? What about during band practice? Does she still have a penis?
Well, she's just writing a song from the perspective of a female presenting a trans person who has a penis and looks like a woman.
Okay, so she's not actually that person. She was creating that character. She's kind of imagining.
Yeah, and writing a song about it. Like, I have an interesting idea. What if I had a penis mm-hmm. and I was dating a dangerous man and I wanted to butt fuck him, and then I found out he had a gun and I didn't know how he was going to feel about the idea that I wanted to butt fuck him, and then we got stranded at this Spanish castle, and then I was like, are there bullets in the gun? Should I whip it out? Like, right there at the end, they come together in silhouette, and then that's the last we see of them. And then she writes fear. That fear would be the fear that this guy's going to kill her, kill the character that she's portraying when he finds out she has a penis and that she wants to do some butt stuff.
That, I mean,
it's like a hate crime.
Yeah, that's
it's a reach. Like, I'll admit it.
It seems like it would be an interesting.
I mean, later on we got Crying Game, Boys Don't Cry, like yeah. You know, like
I feel like I'm giving your theory credence when I want to do the opposite.
No, I think it has no credence. I was just sort of like trying to find the walls, you know, like trying to find like
yeah.
the edges of this.
I mean, the song is kind of about finding the walls.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. Oh, all right. So real quickly, and let's wrap this up and move on.
Okay.
What is the fear? What is she afraid of?
It could be like real fear, but it also could just be kind of flirty. Like, mm-hmm. if I tell you they like this thing, are you going to be mad? Are you going to hate me if I tell you this?
Yeah. It could also be like, It's like I'm afraid. Yeah, coquettish.
Then what is the taboo that he has been giving her?
That's why I like his theory that they tried it, and maybe he was kind of like, "Oh man, was that weird? Did I?
Yeah, like
I was raised Catholic.
Like I brought that in. I came right. in too hot.
Right? Yeah. Was I too into it?
Like and then she was like, No.
Right.
She had him like drunk. Yeah.
We need
and
the yeah. storm.
We haven't yeah. talked about this since it happened. It happened 3 weeks ago. So all right, listen. Yeah. You know, we're gonna talk about this thing, and he's like, "Shit,
yeah." And then he's like, "Oh, I brought out the best of you that way.
This is fantastic. All it's right. like really okay. happy song when you. I mean, this is look. It fucking ends at Christmas and New Year's.
It's very sex positive, I think.
Yes, it starts with a fear, and it ends on literally like the happiest goddamn verse you could ever imagine. I mean. Every day's like Christmas, and every night's like New Year's Eve. I mean, right, her fear was unfounded.
We're kicking off our new life of anal play.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's like if you fall in love with someone, but you're worried that your lifestyles are just not going to mesh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right. Yeah.
Okay. That seems pretty solid to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think heroin's out, but Lord of the Rings is out. I think it's butt sex. Mm-hmm. It is on that.
And the other flip side of it is just like, if I tell you how I feel, if I tell you that I love you and I really care about you, can we keep banging? Like this casual fling.
Oh, that's true.
You gave me the sweetest taboo. You brought out the best in me. Don't run away, but I want to actually lock this in.
Oh, that's interesting. Right.
And I think this goes with really like interesting. Any relationship.
Yes.
Once you admit that you love someone, like there's that moment where you're like, hey, by the way, just FYI, I love you.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, now I'm fucked.
Right.
You know, you're like, well, now I handed this person the upper hand and now I have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. And I think in this case, because there's that, which happens in a lot of songs, but then there's the question of what is the taboo, and it obviously must be the butt sex thing, which it sounds like in this case, maybe Sade enticed her lover into a butt sex scenario and then is worried that, that paints her in a light that will chase her lover away, and then B, that the person's just not doesn't enjoy it, that they're not a match, butt sex wise. Fair enough.
Your penis theory was really
yeah. I just had to voice it because it was out there. Like, I mean, sort of a futanari kind of secret giant penis on a hot lady, but I don't know where you would hide that in those tight jeans that she's wearing. In the video.
Well, she is an expert smuggler.
London calling to the faraway town. All right. London Calling from The Clash, 1979. From the album London Calling, written by Joe Strummer, Mick Jones, Paul Simonon, and Topper Hedden. Here are the lyrics. London calling to the faraway towns. Now war is declared and battle come down. London calling to the underworld. Come out of the cupboard, you boys and girls. London calling, now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania has bitten the dust. London calling, see we ain't got no swing except for the ring of the truncheon thing. The ice age is coming. The sun is zooming in. Meltdown expected. The wheat is growing thin. Engines stop running, but I have no fear because London is drowning and I live by the river. London calling to the imitation zone. Forget it, brother. You can go it alone. London calling to the zombies of death. Quit holding out and draw another breath. London calling, and I don't want to shout, but while we were talking, I saw you nodding out. London calling. See, we ain't got no high except for that one with the yellowy eye. The ice age is coming. The sun's zooming in. Engines stop running. The wheat is growing thin. A nuclear error. But I have no fear. Because London is drowning and I live by the river. All the same. And then, now get this. London calling. Yes, I was there too. And you know what they said? Well, some of it was true. London calling at the top of the dial. And after all this, won't you give me a smile? London calling repeated. I never felt so much alike, alike, alike. Those are the lyrics. Hot takes?
I feel very strongly about this one, that this is heroin. And really,
there are several heroin references blatant in the song.
And
so
and not, really, really, yeah, exactly.
Even if it's wrong, it's not wrong, wrong.
Yeah, but I think it's ingenious in the way that it's talking about this on this macro and micro level. The macro being, you know, London or just a sort of global society and the drug culture and how toxic it's getting and dangerous. But the micro and how it's affecting the band. I mean, Topper Hedden in 1982 is kicked out of the band because his addiction has gotten so bad to what? Heroin. And this just disaster is coming. The ice age is coming. The sun is zooming in. The meltdown's coming. The wheat's growing thin. Engines stop running. But I have no fear because London is drowning and I live by the river. Like, I've already fucked.
I'm not going to make it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, all of you, all of this shit is going to happen to you. This fucking awful thing, it's already. This is what we live in. So to me,
I see.
This is a heartbreaking and very, very powerful song about heroin. You know, rather than being like sort of sad about it, it's almost this like, you know, ironic gleefulness of like, hey, I'm not even scared. This is our fucking life now, you know? And I hope you guys are ready for it.
Well, I do think like that heroin in that sense is sort of, it belongs to two different groups in society. One is I'm going to live forever people, and one is I'm going to die tomorrow people. Mm-hmm. Sort of romantics and cynics is another way to categorize it. That's a sort of on the romantics. I mean, it's sort of where they cross is like, well, you know, if the world ends, like, I don't really care because I already know how I'm going to die, you know, kind of vibe. And I think that does go along with the river thing that you're talking about. I mean, obviously, heroin is there in this song. He mentions it at least twice. One, he says, we ain't got no high except for that one with the yellowy eye, which would be hepatitis gotten through intravenous drug use or just heroin use in general. The other is, while we were talking, I saw you nodding out. So these are both direct references to heroin, but that doesn't mean that the song is about heroin. This origin point or the actual subject of the song. I think there's a good argument to say that that's part of the song, but not the subject of the song. However, you know, going back to the chorus of or the ending of the chorus of the song where I live by the river as sort of like this escape route and heroin as that escape route is quite compelling. You know, it's interesting. I was looking into river, like the term river as referring to heroin, which I think it makes sense that it would be a river type, you know, that river would
bloodstream.
It's a bloodstream kind of thing. And I was interested because I thought that maybe like Down by the River from Neil Young might be about heroin because it's like Down by the River, I shot my baby.
Oh, right.
She could carry me over the rainbow, that sort of thing, which I actually think is because Neil Young went through the exact same thing where one of Crazy Horse died from heroin a couple years after he wrote that song. And I think Neil Young was on heroin when he wrote that song. He apparently was suffering from a 103 degree fever in Topanga Canyon for a week when he wrote that song and Cowgirl in the Sand and Cinnamon Girl. It was at least on his mind. So even if it was just sort of poetic imagination, it kind of makes sense. The river as the human body's bloodstream kind of works with that.
The river has a literal, actual like a literal connection here to the Clash because you know, running up to this record, they were in this writer's block mode. One of the things, the way they sort of jarred themselves out was they moved practice spaces and they moved to a space by
that
the
was
river,
all their own, yeah,
and
Vanilla Studios,
yeah, and so they could just, this became their world, this became their London.
They did it the way like Bob Marley recorded. They had like a soccer yard. They would just record. Then they would have lunch. Then they would record again. Then they would have dinner. Then they would go out drinking. Then they would be back in the morning.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, they were like literally practicing in a flood zone.
Yes.
That had not been reinforced yet. Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Briefly, the larger context of this song are sort of standard interpretation. This was right after, I believe, the Three Mile Island disaster, which is sort of like what he refers to as the nuclear error in the song. And I will say, just to cut to the chase here, because, you know, Sweetest Taboo took took so much of our focus. That ending of the song where he says, so much alike, 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 alike. In the vanilla tapes or the vanilla studios demo recordings, he says, it never felt so much like London Calling, which was the Allied London-based radio during World War II. So in this case, sort of to reassure British citizens and British soldiers that London was still there, or that something was still there. And in this case, the Clash puts themselves in that role, saying, like, we're still here. Even though they say, don't look to us, the same way that London would say, don't look to us, fight. Like, wherever you are, fight.
Yeah, and they're, like, under siege the same way. They don't have literal rockets coming towards them, but they're broke. They owe money.
The world is falling apart, as far as I can tell, you know?
Yeah.
And punk is, when I initially looked at this song, I thought it was, you know, I was like, okay, this is about the transition away from the Beatles and Badfinger and all these sorts of things into punk, but I was wrong.
This song was like about 2 years earlier than it actually was.
Right. This is later than I thought.
Yeah. I thought it was 77 and 79?
79.
Okay. Yeah.
And to me, that makes sense because early Clash stuff, they were sort of very like openly self-referential and trying to build up this like brand, you know, for lack of a better thing. You had Clash City Rockers, you know?
Right.
There was a lot of this, like almost like Devo. We are Devo in their own songs, you know? And then here they are going like, well, don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania has bitten the dust. It's this self-indictment to me that's saying like...
It's a little confusing because Phony Beatlemania had already bitten the dust.
Yeah, but to me, that's like saying, don't look to us. Like, look, yeah, we built up this Clash City Rockers thing. Look what happened to fucking Beatlemania. Same shit's going to happen to us. Mm-hmm. And by the way, while we were talking, I saw our drummer nodding out.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, that's... It's funny. You introduced me to the vanilla version.
Different lyrics.
Yeah, and
early draft.
And to me, so when I heard, you know, I was only familiar with the actual, you know, single, and the end of that, I never felt so much like always felt to me like someone falling asleep, like nodding out.
I see.
Which was.
But do you get my reference that it's actually like?
Yes.
I think what he's saying is it never felt so much like wartime.
Yes. Yeah. Totally. Oh, yeah. And absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I do think there's, of course, a Lord of the Rings interpretation. I think you can pretty much think of Minas Tirith as a stand in for London.
Absolutely.
It's at the also, south part.
Just to throw it out there, I have nothing for butt sex on this.
I don't either.
No, absolutely not. But even I got Lord of the fucking Rings
the
on this.
The only closest thing you have is come out of the cupboard, you boys and girls, where it's like, is that the closet? Could that have been how they referred to that in the 70s?
That's Faramir and his Rangers.
Yeah, but it just doesn't feel like. But, you know, if you go the Lord of the Rings interpretation, they are calling to the faraway towns for reinforcements.
They're lighting the fires.
They literally call to the underworld. Like, they bring back an army of ghosts to break the siege. Don't really know what Phony Beatlemania would have been. Possibly that's the cult of Saruman that has fallen. Isn't like, he's the knockoff Sauron.
Yeah, I mean, isn't there this like spider-like insect thing that occupies
Shelob? Yes.
Yeah.
And isn't that kind of a Beetlemania?
Yeah, it's too minor. It doesn't. Okay. It doesn't figure.
It's, I think it's more like Saruman's like the knockoff Dark Lord.
Okay.
And he's like playing a lot of covers. He's got his own like slightly different orcs, but they're not as good.
Even Gandalf thought that Saruman was chill, and he was wrong.
Yeah.
So. Like that makes sense. I do think that Beetlemania would be sort of like the death or the fall of the Astari, and there's only one left. Forget it, brother. You can go alone. Would be what Gandalf does.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and he also rides out alone in that battle to rescue. What's his name?
God, he rides out alone all the fucking
constantly
time.
Constantly, he's there just going into a sea of orcs.
He falls in the lava all alone. He rides away on Shadowfax and says, I'll meet you later, all alone. And then he shows up all alone.
And there's like a whole winter thing, right? Whole Ice Age kind of...
Yeah, the sun's dark during that battle. They break all the war engines. And, you know, they literally live by a river that's being overrun. Now the flood that happens a little that's more outside Rivendell. That's due to magic, not really like incompetence and the end of the world. But I mean, it is a very similar apocalyptic vision. However, just he's just obviously talking about this drummer nodding out while they're making the song. It feels like that part about nodding out is enough.
I don't know if he's talking about the drummer in particular. He's just talking about London rockers.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I just want to bring in something that you had said earlier about the tone of Lord of the Rings, which is this war reporting tone.
Yes.
And it brings it back again to this London calling thing and this very unemotional, straightforward calling it as it is,
right.
This unsentimental kind of thing. And it's sort of employing that same tone that Lord of the Rings has. It's a real parallel.
And The Clash does that several times where they sort of put themselves in the place of a radio DJ.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is Radio Clash. You know, they do that. It's a habit of theirs.
The other interesting Lord of the Rings thing is when they get to the point where they say, and you know what they said? Well, some of it was true, which a lot of that, what's happening that's freaking people out so much is that all these legends are actually sort of coming true, that it's like, oh, there really are hobbits. These ghosts are actually coming. But it's also this culture of limited / misinformation constantly. Like,
people
are getting the wrong reports. Prophecies are being believed, which are like very vague about swords and heirs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Aragorn was sort of shocked when the shards of Narsil were, put back together. He was like, the what? Really?
Yeah.
the what?
Yeah, not a lot of spit takes.
So there is one, I mean, the only other one that's out there for Lord of the Rings, I think you could do a Denethor thing just in terms of like the nose down, like this person's just like calling it.
Yeah,
because the world's going to shit.
Yeah, I live by the river. People are nodding out because they're depressed. And
yeah, and then
in World War II, again, if that was an influence, the opioids taken to treat war injuries and pain.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, that was the way a lot of soldiers died. If they lived through the injury, they died on morphine.
Yeah, I mean. Is the yellowy eye, isn't there an eye of Sauron? Or?
It's an eye of Sauron. It is red.
It's red?
Yeah, but, I mean, I'd have to dig for more of the yellowy.
And then there is in the First Age, Nienor and Turin, brother and sister. Turin was cursed by Morgoth and lost two sisters needlessly. One of them died from a plague that was Morgoth's doing. The second one, Nienor, he encountered in the forest, called her Niniel, the crying maiden, and she threw herself off a cliff into a river.
Yeah, because they hooked up, right?
They did.
Yeah.
So that works a little bit, but it just doesn't...
I think the heroin one is just so strong, and like... Yeah, you get a lot of parallels in sort of like corruption and decay and imminent sense of doom in all of them. But I think there's enough heroin stuff that that as much as I'm loath to say that any song isn't about Lord of the Rings on this podcast, I think I'm going to go with heroin on this one. Yeah.
That was also the time, you know, in America, like rivers were on fire. This was like,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
This was like, the Ohio River was that?
Or the Hudson, I think, caught on fire.
No, the Ohio, yeah, the Ohio River too, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like the height of pollution where it was like, oh, guys.
Because
like,
I think the EPA only dates back to like 1971 or something 70, like that.
Yeah, yeah, 71, 73, something like that. Yeah. And it had not really like kicked in. It hadn't really started to do a job. I think this is like sort of one around the turning point where we're like, all right, let's click it down a couple of notches and the river stops catching on fire. Later on, we fix the ozone layer. We've done a couple things well. So, I mean, all of that is very encouraging as far as our future because we're still there to a certain extent with the environment.
Is the EPA in business anymore? I think that went out of business a couple years ago. I think, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Actually, it ended in 2016.
Yeah, yeah. I think they're handling easy pass now, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and butt sex, I got nothing on this one. Again.
No.
And the music video for this, not much there. It's just them playing in the rain, just sort of a dramatic, sort of troubled rendition. As far as I'm concerned, Sweetest Taboo is about butt sex. And then with London Calling from The Clash, you know, you would think it's about heroin, and lo and behold, it is about heroin. It makes several references to heroin inside it. It makes a reference to war, oppression, all good reasons, apparently, to start doing heroin or to kill yourself doing heroin because the world's going to suck. That apocalyptic imagination.
Once again, we have arrived on musical truth.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think we nailed it. David Obuchowski, thank you so much for joining us.
Man, what an honor.
Also, if we've talked about one of your songs on the podcast, Roland Orzabal, if you want to call in, tell us why we're wrong about Everybody Wants to Rule the World. Daryl Hall, Sophie B. Hawkins, Sting, Damon Albarn, Mike Patton, if you guys want to call in and be on the show, or that's totally fine. The new season, when can we expect the new season of Tempest? How long is this going to be? I know it just got signed up now.
It's going to be, we're in production right now. It's going to be in the dead heat of the summer. I will not give a exact date yet, but it's going to be right in the middle of the summer. It's going to be an awesome, awesome season. First season was a lot more personal stories. The second is going to be even bigger.
Broader. Yeah. I look forward to it. Mr. Sean Keane, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
We're getting through it. Soon we'll have done every song on the planet. If you want to back up any of these critiques, or if you want to support or cut down any of these interpretations, you can leave us a voice message. There is a phone number in the show notes. You can also email us at hbslotr@gmail.com. And we also have a Spotify playlist listed in the show notes. If you want to add songs that you would like us to tackle, you can just do that. It's an open playlist, and I will prune it as necessary. But feel free to add 100 songs, and I'll just chop out 75 of them. This has been fantastic. Thank you very much for joining us, David.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and welcome to Los Angeles.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
We're lucky to have you. And thank you very much for joining us. Outro music by Wet and Reckless. We will see you very soon again on Heroin, Butt Sex, and Lord of the Rings.